you're like me, you probably have a closet full of local band merch. And whether you know it or not, a lot of that band merch was probably made by Divine Shirt Company right here in Winnipeg. Divine Shirt Company has made all of the Great Witch Police merch, from our hoodies to our toques to our t-shirts. And if you're looking to get anything done, like screen printing, embroidery, graphic design, digital printing, go to see Divine Shirt Company at divineshirtcompany.ca and tell them Witch Police Radio sent you.
One of our colleagues, Sam Thompson, who, if you saw him, you'd sort of right away assume he was a hippie.
Witch Police Radio. Witch Police Radio.
It's your friendly neighborhood text-to-speech robot here because Sam forgot to record this intro himself. Just a heads up that there were some big old call connection issues at the beginning of this interview, but the quality improves considerably as it goes along. Thanks for your patience.
All right, welcome to Witch Police Radio. I'm here with someone who is a new artist to me, but you were actually recommended by a few different people who've been on the show before. So, you know, I'm glad that we were able to make this happen because, you know, after sort of listening to your stuff, after hearing those recommendations, I like it. I have a lot of questions about it, but I think the best way to start it off is if you want to introduce yourself and give a bit of background about what it is you do as an artist.
Well, howdy. It's really great to be here on this podcast. It's such an honor. My name is Milt Homley, and I am from Caddo County, Oklahoma, and I was mostly raised in rural Manitoba, but I started writing some country songs about 5 years ago. And lo and behold, with the help of some friends that I met through doing the open mic scene here, I've just put out a 10-song album, and I am just here to, I love writing songs, and it's been fun to just recording them lately, and looking forward to just playing these songs and hopefully getting some shows lined up.
This is a question everyone hates answering, but how do you define what you do? I mean, I have some ideas listening to it, but I'm curious, how you describe it. If someone hears you have a record out, they want to know what kind of music you play, what do you call it?
I didn't even know what I call it. What I'm going for now, these days I'm calling it funky western. Kind of bluesy. Like, I thought I was starting out off of the country musician. I don't think I can call myself country, especially with this album. It just has a more of a bluesy rocking feel to it, which is great. I didn't plan it that way. Word I like to call it is the pity party rock, because it's sad songs that they're kind of made to dance along to and jump around to be into it.
Awesome. Well, I mean, when I sort of got into it, I was about to listen. I figured, based on sort of the whole vibe of the cover art and everything, I assumed it was going to be a country record. And there's definitely that country vibe is in there. But one thing I noticed kind of right off with the album is that it's very, I don't know what the word is, I was going to say noisy, but it's like there's a lot happening. I mean, a lot of sort of what I expect from singer-songwriter sort of country vibes, which I was anticipating, is very sparse and very just sort of, you know, really stripped down and basic. But your stuff there's like action happening, you know, sort of wall to wall, sonically. So is that just how you write, or like, because it seems like an aesthetic choice of just having a lot of instruments, a lot of voices, a lot of things happening sort of all at once?
Yeah, you know, I have songs I've been sitting on, not a lot of them good, but when I got down to Ryan's place and we started recording them, he
put him in this direction, man. The album called Dirty Pain. I think if I hadn't met Ryan Whiskey, it might just be called the maybe slightly untidy pain, but Ryan just got in there and made it dank and gritty and grimy, dirty. And it, like, I wrote the song, but Ryan had a lot of influence in a good way, in terms of, just adding suggestions as to things we could add lib and sort of, so there's a lot of hooting and hollering and shouting in the background that you picked up on.
So you mentioned sort of right off the top that you were doing a lot of open mics, And like we just sort of discussed, I mean, the record has a lot more going on than what would typically happen at an open mic. So, I mean, how are you, are these songs written in a very, very basic kind of, you know, guitar, vocals, whatever sort of way? And then they've turned into something bigger. And then the question, I guess, on top of that is, how do they translate? I mean, how much work has to go into sort of converting them into the way they end up on the record?
Yeah. Yeah, no, you're right. So I love the process of writing songs and practicing a little bit and then taking them to open mics and then just kind of, using that stage to just practice them. So they sort of sounded, so they are very just essentially starting out to strip down just basic songs. They just evolve, through the recording process. And I blame old Ryan Whiskey for that, because he was the one that said, man, your songs are too slow, man. He said, you gotta speed these things up. And I've never done this before. This is my first time sort of making and putting out music. And so I just decided to kind of be open to some ideas. And I think it was a good idea, but I let Ryan take the songs and make them faster for sure. And he just punched them up and, like I said, made them a little grungier, a little grimier. Because, it's a gritty sound. It's a gritty, grimy, dirty sound.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And I think that all the, sort of the chaos with, like you said, the ad-libs and things like that in the background, it definitely adds to that kind of grimy sound to it, which is cool. It's something different for sure that I, haven't heard many people do with this sort of style that you have.
Yeah, I'm glad you picked up on that. And I think part of it, too, is like, part of the reason I decided to kind of make country music was because I find that it's kind of a humorous genre to be, like, it's pretty funny a lot the content of songs, the lyrics and whatnot. And
there's the potential there for sure with country to
And we were going, and a lot of this we're going for laughs on it too. Like we were having a whole hoot when we were making this thing. I hope that can kind of shines through that we were labor of love, but a labor of laughter as well.
I was actually going to ask you about that. I was wondering, like, I mean, how much of this is, because some of it is straight up, like, almost seems like comedy songs. Some of the songs are a little more serious, but a lot of them are just kind of like, they're outright funny. Not just in a subtle kind of way. It's just like, this is a funny story. This is a funny lyrics. How much of this whole persona is just that, is a character you're playing? How much of this is sort of the character as well as the songs all sort of in one package?
Yeah, well, that's a bit of the mystery about it. And that's the thing that I'm even finding. I'm finding blurred lines myself in it. And sometimes I'm like, because this character, it is based on a true thing. I mean, I was born in Oklahoma, so that's kind of where this whole thing gets started from. But I didn't live there too long. I moved up to rural Manitoba when I was a kid. But I like to say I brought two things with me from Oklahoma, and that was my bottle and my drawl. I keep those things in the drawer next to me. And I've done the album a few times.
3, 4.
Stains all over my pants. Some I can explain, some I can't. All the ladies point and laugh when I ask them to dance. I got stains all over my pants. Stains all over my pants. Making it impossible for any romance. I throw them in the wash. Next time I get a chance, I got stains. From a baby beer, bourbon, whiskey, red wine.
so there's a lot of truth, but of course, I mean, it's art and it's comedy, and so of course things are exaggerated, which I think country music lends itself to that. And again, the humor aspect. But however, I got to say, the Dirty pain is real, man. It comes from a deep, dark place, and I think, like a lot of comedians or artists, to use humor and levity a little bit to deal with you know, the life's catastrophes that everyone deals with is, I think, a healthy way. It can be maybe sometimes it masks things as well, but I'm aware of it, I think. But anyway, it's comedy is a big part of what I am going for here.
Yeah, I figured as much. Yeah, I kind of like the idea that it's a blurred line too, that you don't really know sort of where the joke begins and where the serious ends. Kind of it makes it more interesting than if it was straight up, you know, everything is a joke here. Like it gives it kind of a more interesting vibe.
I hope so. Yeah, like which goes back to the question, like, how do I define my music? I don't really know. It's just I'm just doing what I'm doing. It's kind of weird, offbeat storytelling, and it's meant to, you know, when I'm writing the lyrics, I'm laughing, and if I'm not laughing, then I don't know if I'll keep doing it. So, and it's been neat because I've only played a couple times in front of people, and to hear other folks get the joke sometimes and laugh along. Oh my goodness, what a heartwarming feeling.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Well, then you know they're really listening, right? Then you know they're not just using you as background music. They're actually paying attention to which, I mean, country music storytelling is such a huge part of it, and the fact that they're paying attention to the story, that's a win for you, I think, in terms of, you know, getting the audience on your side.
Right. And also again, lyrics too are a huge part of what I do. I love the art of songwriting. I'm not so much of a musician. So that's why I'm so glad that Ryan Whiskey stepped in to play a lot of the fancy guitar parts and bass lines. And then, man, Curtis, another friend from Open Mics, Curtis, did all the drumming. And it's actually a lot of just open mic folks that did this. And so I love that aspect of it. But what I'm excited about is playing these songs with the band, so that because that really enhances the songs and, you know, really puts the flesh on these bones, you know, because there's only so much I can do as I'm not really much of a guitar player. I like to sing, but my guitar playing is would be greatly enhanced for the band. So that's what is kind of the works at the moment.
This is sort of a, again, I don't want to dwell on the what genre are you, because I mean, it sucks as a question because it's hard to define, you know, with a lot of people. But where do you think that this full band version of what you do would be sort of situate itself in the local music scene? Because there's the comedy side of things, there's clearly the country influence. Like you said, it's grimier and grungier, and I could see it fitting in a heavier show, not like a death metal show or anything, but something maybe a little bit more distorted than your typical country gig, right? So do you sort of have an idea of where you want this to place itself?
Good question. I mean, no, I guess, like, you're right. With the full band, it's a totally different sound. I've been playing a couple solo acoustic shows, and I'm almost like, yeah, I'm kind of almost bored playing it. I'm like, man, I can't wait to get the band together. But yeah, I guess because we are, the songs are faster and louder and grimier, I think we would fit into more of like a bluesy sort of rock venue. I would play anywhere. I don't really have any shows lined up or anything. It's all just kind of new. But I would play anywhere, you know, anywhere where people want to listen. But yeah, it's hard to define. When I was starting out, I would consider myself sort of just a folk country singer songwriter kind of thing, but not with this album and with the band.
Yeah, yeah. So what's the how long have you been working on these songs on this album? Are some of them, like, you know, stuff you've had sort of in the brain for a number of years now, or is it all fairly recent writing?
Yeah, a bit of both. I got started on this project almost 5 years ago, and a couple of the songs are about almost 5 years old. Draw in the Drawer. That's I think the first song I wrote. Love Don't as well, and then a couple are brand new that I just wrote a couple months ago. And then a few in between. Like, I've written a ton of songs, but these are kind of grouped together on, there's a bit of a theme going on. It's like, you know, I repeat a lot of words and phrases and yeah, the concept is dirty pain. So it's talking about sort of a certain time, certain themes of love lost and love gone wrong.
Love gone wrong is and love lost obviously are a huge topics for any style of music. I mean, there's certain styles of music that do it better than others. I think country is one of them. But how do you sort of tackle something that is that serious and that, you know, usually anyway, a very personal, emotional concept, and then add humor to that? Because it seems like they would clash, you know? Like, you're making jokes, but then also you're dealing with this, like, the heartbreak, right? Is it easy to combine the two? Like, do you see an inherent humor in sort of the situation that people find themselves in when they're heartbroken?
I think so. I think I'm trying to find the funny parts of it. Like, I think, again, going back to this genre of country where I started, I think it lends itself to kind of, I can kind of mask it a little bit, you know, like, I don't know. So I like listening to Death Cab for Cutie, but I don't like to, like, none of their songs make me want to laugh. But like, I can listen to a song and like, I can crack a smile, even though he's talking about some painful things. And so I think maybe I'm using it as a bit of a mask or a bit of a something to deflect. So it's easy to go into the painful topics because I know I can just sort of go at him with at a humorous angle, you know? And so I don't have to take it too seriously. And I'm pretty self-deprecating on this album, probably too much. But this is dirty pain, and the next album is going to be a departure for sure. But
right,
yeah.
Have you sort of exercised those demons on this one? Like, you've got out what you need to say, sort of about that subject matter?
Oh, for sure, man. Oh, it's magical. What's happened since putting that out? It's like, man, this is the free therapy in addition to eat therapy. Yeah. But to release the songs, it's almost like some burdens lifted. Like, it just symbolically, you know, or something. It just feels good to have that out, and whether one person listens to it or nobody, it doesn't really matter. It just it's kind of like, here, world, go deal with this now.
Yeah, it's, you're done with it, right? Now they can listen to it and have their own feelings about it, but you can move on.
Away, yeah, totally, man.
Line, it was a week ago now. She was looking so fine.
Does the whatever the next thing is? I mean, again, obviously this record just came out. You're working on the band thing. I'm sure you'll be sort of living with these songs for a bit longer. But once you move on to whatever the next part of this project is, do you expect more sort of experimentation with the sound? I mean, because it's already gone from singer-songwriter stuff to this more sort of heavier, grungier, full band thing, right?
Yes. Yeah, I do have a few plans in the works, actually. What I actually started a couple of years ago recording a couple songs with my friend Rory Verbrugge. And so the songs they might come out. I don't know when to set it. I won't set a date, but maybe mid to late summer, maybe early fall. I'm going to be putting out two songs, and those are going to sound really different than the album. Those are going to sound a lot slower, a lot more laid back, more of a sort of traditional country sound, with Rory Lee and those steel guitar licks there. Oh,
yeah, yeah, that makes an impact for sure. Yeah.
And then I do have plans record two songs. I'm kind of in the works of, I've written one song in Japanese, and I'm working on a second one.
Okay,
I love the genre of Japanese Enka music. I don't know if you're familiar, but it's kind of a traditional sort of Japanese music that I sort of fell in love with when I was living over there a few years back. And so I wrote one song in Japanese, and I'm working on my second one, and that's going to sound really, really different, because I'm going for the traditional sort of Enka sound, which people can Google it or whatever, or find it on Spotify. I like to bend genres and just explore different things. So who knows what the future may hold, especially if I keep collaborating with such fabulous, wonderful musicians who are really kind of able to take some of my ideas for songs and just take them in new directions. And the beauty of collaboration, it's amazing.
Definitely. Definitely. So are you, like, do you fluently speak Japanese, or is this a translation? Like you said, you lived there.
Well, I mean, I can't say I'm fluent now. One time I was pretty good, as the years go by, I keep losing it. I can still pronounce the words okay, so I still can think in Japanese a little bit and kind of write. Now I don't, these songs are probably going to sound a little funny, but I'm giving it my best effort, my best attempt.
I know this is in the future, but do these Japanese songs, do they have the same humor elements and sort of the same kind of vibe? I know it's a very different sound, like you said, but do you inject your own personality into these, or are you trying sort of more focused on getting the vibe of that style right?
It's going to be a bit of both, I think. I think it's going to be really trying to emulate I want to honor that style, but I do want to give it a little bit of milk flavor. And I think that music as well, it does lend itself to kind of a little bit of a country bluesy sort of feel.
Okay.
So I think it could be fun. I think I'm excited to see what Ryan Whiskey or someone like that might do with a guitar on some of those. Yeah, so we'll see. We'll see what happens with those.
Cool. And then I guess, like, you know, if people are hearing this now, like you said, sort of, you know, this is your first crack at this. You're fairly new to a lot of people in the local music scene. What, how do people find you? Where do they hear this record? I mean, I know that people listen to music in about 1,000 different ways in 2024. But where would you send someone if they were hearing this and said, hey, I want to check this out? What's the best way to find your stuff?
Right, because yeah, at the moment there isn't a physical copy. I haven't made any cassettes or CDs or vinyl records. I am going to probably make a few CDs just to have something physically hand out. But yeah, at the moment it's just available on all them streaming services, the Spotify's, the Apples, the whatnots, all them. But oh man, this is I don't know what I'm doing in this this whole online, the internet universe of putting out music. But, you know, I got some friends that are helping me with it a little bit. I'm kind of like, when it comes to technology, like an 80-year-old man. And so this is all...
Yeah, it's weird. It's weird now. It's like a weird dystopia we're in where I don't understand a lot of it either. And I don't know how to use streaming services yet. Like, I can use YouTube and Bandcamp, and that's about it. And people start talking about Spotify, and it's just completely over my head. So... I'm glad to hear you are going to do physical copies, because there are some people old and set in their ways like me who like pretty much rely on physical copies of albums to be able to listen to them properly. Yeah. But I mean, I know, yeah, we're in an era where Spotify and Apple and all that stuff is sort of the main consumption for most people.
Yeah. I think part of it was just a rush. I could have waited maybe to do the CDs, but I just wanted to kind of prematurely get it out there, so to speak. And,
Yeah,
but I hear what you're saying. I also appreciate the physical copy. I like records, man. I have a little collection,
yeah,
and just something to hold in your hands is nice. But in the world we're living in, man, it'll get me started.
Yeah, definitely. What has the reception been so far to this record? Because I mean, you know, probably a lot of people haven't heard your stuff because you've been mostly doing open mics and things like that. And again, the sound is maybe different than I think a lot of people might expect from. Just the whole package, right? So what have people been telling you? Like, have you got a good reaction to the songs, to the album?
Well, I think my mother's very disappointed in me. I could just hear it in her voice when she talked to me. And then maybe the two other people that listened to the album, I think one of them liked it. I've heard feedback from a couple of folks, and it's been positive and kind of neat. I've actually met a few folks who have sort of reached out and I've connected because they listened to it. And so that's been really neat. Like, man, again, you write these songs, you put them out, and you don't really think anybody's going to hear them. And then to actually find out that someone did listen to it and they appreciated it, they liked the humor, they connected with something on it, that's such a neat, almost indescribable feeling.
Yeah, that's awesome. And the cool thing, too, is that, like, you know, as much as I complain about this dystopian technological future we're all in, I mean, the fact that you can just take your music you recorded, throw it online, and then it's instantly available to literally anyone who wants to hear it. Like, that's one of the good things about the bar has been lowered so much for just making your music available to the widest audience.
For sure. Yeah, that's a good... Yeah. Who knows? Like you said, this is the first time for me doing this, and I'm... I'm a man of a certain age, and so I think this probably the ease with which one can record and put out music now, I think, makes it a lot more accessible. So that, of course, that's for sure a positive thing.
Definitely. Do you think that you're and I'm asking you this because, like you said, I mean, you have you've been in Manitoba, but you have roots outside of Manitoba, and obviously, like, I mean, you have an accent when you sing. All this stuff. Do you think that there's a local feeling to your record? Like, do you think that there's Manitoba sound, whatever that may be? Because I know it's impossible for anyone to define what Manitoba sound is. But does that seep in? Like, do you feel that local aura, like, you know, sneaking into your record?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I think so. I think definitely, because it's part of my, like, I was mostly raised, I would say, in rural Manitoba. And I think rural lifestyle is more the connection, because I also was the very small town in Oklahoma, about 1,000 people, so rural central Oklahoma, rural Manitoba, and I think that that lifestyle, I'll add fairly conservative, conservatively religious surroundings as well,
sure.
Communities, both of them. And that definitely, I think, influenced things a bit. But yeah, I would say there is in some way a Manitoba sound. I don't know how to describe it. And there's maybe like a Winnipeg, there's a grungy North End Winnipeg basement sound in there too, because a lot of it was just some basement vibes. I also got started hitting my stride, I think, in songwriting during the pandemic. So that again was for me an opportunity. Nothing really changed socially for me. I was distancing anyway, but it gave me an opportunity to really get down and write.
Awesome. Well, I think that happened with a lot of people. It was either one way or the other. I mean, of the people I've talked to on the show since the pandemic, it's either been they use that as an opportunity to be very prolific and write and record and whatever else. And then other people have just found it to be completely the opposite, where they were just blocked.
Well,
like, I don't know if it was because what was going on in the world or because they couldn't sort of do their usual routine. But yeah, it seems like there was no middle ground. It was people were either using it and writing and being creative, and other people just completely shut down. So it's just cool to hear that you were the more on the active side of things there.
Yeah, things came together in good ways for me then. I think it was a time and thing. I also had some health issues with my left eyeball where the good Lord done sent some parasites that took my eyesight away.
Oh,
and so I've been dealing with that and again writing. And that kind of forced me inside even more so after the pandemic, just because I had a hard time seeing the light of day, literally.
I kind of
turned that time too into a bit of a reflective, very, very self-reflective, but also got some writing done too in that time.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, I feel like the eye patch gives you a unique look too, right? I mean, it's memorable. It's like, you know, you say the name, maybe someone forgets it, and they're like, oh, yeah, the guy with the eye patch. I mean, you don't see that very often, right? So it's got to help you a little bit in terms of like just recognition.
Oh, hey, I'll use any gimmick I can, man. I don't always need to wear it. It's just, you know, sometimes it helps kind of block out the light. A little light sensitive in the left eye. I usually just wear glasses.
Totally, yeah.
You know, yeah, it don't hurt to have a little fun.
No, it's nice to see more eye patches. I have a lazy eye, so I wear eye patches as a kid a lot. And yeah, so it's always good to see more of them out there, because you don't see them that much these days, except in like pirate movies and shit. So
solidarity,
it's kind of nice.
Yeah,
to,
all right. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Exactly. Like so, like Madonna doing it just for some gimmick, where it's like, oh yeah, I'm just trying to be cool.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah, no, you need to actually need it, I think, to make it worthwhile. If people again are hearing you for the first time on the show, where do they find out more about maybe upcoming shows and things like that? Like, what's the best way to find you on social media or elsewhere?
I wish I was more savvy, but I ain't. I think at the moment, Instagram. I am. You can find a profile on Manitoba Music as well. In terms of shows, I don't really have any. I'm playing my favorite hardware store this coming Saturday, June 15th, Pollock Hardware, the North Edge. Shout out to that place.
Unfortunately, that'll be after this comes out. It'll be before this comes out, but hopefully people were there. That's a cool place to play a show.
But no, I don't really have any shows lined up. I'm hoping to in the future, but we'll see where it goes. I ain't no rush, you know. I'm just taking things one day at a time. And like I said, my main focus now is starting to get together with the band here and really solidify these songs as a three-piece.
I saw her standing there in the customs line. It was a week ago now. She was looking so fine. Stood there beside her. I'm a love smuggler, contraband feelings.
Let me leave you with this. My hand is touching your hand for this gathering of the biggest body of people in this country, in this universe, all over the world now. Reach it out, because the love that was given me in this time, I will repay you now, because I will be the next world's heavyweight champion on this hard time blues.